Welcome to AFL Nation.
Gary Rowan wins it after the siren with a dead-eye shot.
Where are you, buddy?
There he is! He juggles the mark at the front.
Ball to Springer, the magic man. He's done it again. Jake Springer, the everywhere man.
He sets the chance to get through. Bontempelli! Simply the bunt!
Gives it to Gord. Will he from 55? He will! He can! He does!
He gave it to Dusty. Martin, goal! Tigers in front!
At the final bell, it's a brand new flag. 57 years of torment eased, and a curse lifted. Melbourne are premiers in 2021.
AFL Nation.
And it will be standing room only. All seated tickets are sold for tonight, and that's because it's fourth versus fifth, but it owes very specifically to the rise of Carlton. They're 7-2. The scent of success is back in the nostrils of the Navy Blue fans. And tonight they come to test themselves against the Sydney Swans, who have mixed their form a little, but their equation at 6-3 is a promising one indeed. There's a certain Lance Franklin who'll headline the start of Sir Doug Nicholls' round as well. Tonight, Friday night footy on AFL Nation, the Blues and the Swans. For Sports Power, get the latest big brand footy boots in store at Sports Power now. Jared Waitley with you. Anthony Hudson is with me. Hello, Hutto.
Hello, Jared. Good evening, everyone. Hope you're having a great Friday night. It comes early this round, doesn't it? The good matches are at the start, beginning with tonight, probably hard to go past. So great weekend ahead, of course, as we start to weekends of Sir Doug Nicholls' round. When it's a major golf tournament weekend, Jared, it's always a little bit harder to cram everything in. So it is exciting. And I've got both these teams, if not in my top four, very close. I've ended up going with the Swans tonight, but I could also see that Carlton could monster them in the middle. But I just think here the Swans have played some pretty good footy over the time, and I've got faith that the Swans will be there at the pointy end. So I can't wait to see where this all heads. We saw a taste of Carlton without Harry Mackay last week, but that'll get a bit more sorely tested, I think, tonight.
They look like good counterpoints for each other, so we'll see how the method and the personnel goes pitted against each other. So I feel like we're really well-stocked, old bull, young bull tonight. Young bull, Nathan Jones is in place. Hello, Nathan.
Yeah, thanks for having me, guys. Looking forward to this one. I haven't worked with Durham this year, so it will be interesting as we battle it out. But
You don't have to say much when you're on with Durham.
I've heard the positives and the negatives, but we've started well, so I'm looking forward to tonight. And, as you guys have mentioned, this is going to be a cracker game. We should be in for a treat.
I don't know whether I've explained the old bull, young bull scenario to Dermot, so he might be vaguely insulted. I doubt it. Old
got
bull,
a feeling
Dermot.
I know what it is.
How are you, Dermot?
I'm very well. Good evening, gentlemen. You know what? This week, the week that we've just had, I feel like this is my speciality. The acts of verbal aggression, demonstrative behaviour, the mental battle out on the ground that's got nothing to do with the footy. That's right up my alley.
Yes, yes. I had a feeling your specialist portfolios are in good store. So we've got you tonight and for crunch time as well to fully work through all of it. What about tonight in Prospector as we gather for it?
Oh, I'm pretty excited to watch the Blues again. I saw a fair bit of them early in the season and then unfortunately haven't been to a live game for a while. And, I've publicly mentioned my crush for Paddy Cripps. It's an absolute man crush at that. He's probably the best player in the competition for mine at the minute. And, it's been an intriguing one. I think when Mackay went down, I was worried and thought, you know, can they steady the ship? And I thought last week for them was a really significant win. I actually tipped the Giants just thinking that, you know, that I guess the motivation that they had and obviously being on their home deck, I thought they'd get the job done. But for me, Carlton really put a stake in the ground and delivered even when challenged during that game. So I think tonight presses to be a pretty exciting one. And the Swans, you know, a couple of weeks ago, I was very bullish about them. They went shaky for a bit. I think, a big result last week against a struggling Bombers outfit probably primes them for tonight's game, which ultimately should turn into a cracker.
Sydney Swans, for me, are an interesting kettle of fish. It's almost like they've clocked in for some games and no one's beating them, and then they've clocked off for other games. I mean, North Melbourne almost knocked them over, and North aren't travelling all that well. Had a good but simplistic game plan when they played them last time, you know, 4, 5, 6 weeks ago. And then we have a look at some of the other games they've dropped. They just haven't turned up. That, to me, that's a real between the ears scenario. They want for nothing out on the ground in terms of their makeup. Their system works pretty good. And even then, you go back to the when they played my favourite team, the Hawks, they were two teams in the one day. They were awful for the first 40 minutes, like deplorable. And then they were world beaters and could not do anything wrong thereafter. The Blues, I mean, I do have a laugh, and I've got Carlton mates, and we all know Andy Maher incredibly well, and he's trying to say the psyche of the Carlton supporter has changed after the tumultuous or the non-tumultuous, because they haven't got to the turmoil end of the season. So they've had civility belted into them over 20 years of absolute pain. No, it's still there. It's still there.
I'm with you. I don't believe that for a second.
No, it's fake humility.
Multiple games where at the 20-minute mark of the last quarter, they're broken into song in the stands. So I'm not having any of that.
Yeah, get up and get about. Hey, that's not too often in your club's history they end up at the 9-game mark 7-2. Of that, I mean, not talking Carlton. I mean anyone. That's an enormous effort, enormous effort. So have fun. Take the ride while it's going. And who knows, if they get better, and if you are a serious contender, you still get better from where you are at round 9 when it turns into round 18, 19, 20 and finals. You're still getting better. I've loved what's happened with young Matthew Kennedy. I will remind Carlton supporters that when Hopper and Kennedy were both under 17, I think, Riverina footballers, the Giants needed to move out players to get their points up, because the one thing they did say was, we have to do everything to get Kennedy and Hopper. And we'll get that right. Not Hopper and Kennedy. The way I heard it was Kennedy and Hopper. They didn't know which one was going to be better. Kennedy's taken the long way around, but he has turned into a wonderful, wonderful footballer, and just what Carlton needed. He's taken the heat off Cripps to be the bang crash player, and Cripps has now run through game, or through the lines, has gone to a new level. So, rap for what he's done, and they're getting better in so many other areas. Anyway, I'm talking too much about Carlton. We'll talk about the game soon.
So it feels like the Swans have been susceptible to contested ball teams.
Yep.
And there might be maybe only Melbourne that's better than Carlton in the contested ball game.
Yeah, well, I like Durham's point before. I think a lot of it with Sydney definitely comes back to between the ears. I also probably look at the demographic of their list, and they have injected a whole heap of youth. So with that will come an element of inconsistency. And then the reliance on those senior players are getting quite on, and Kennedy, Buddy, Parker, all these guys are heading towards, or if not over 30, and they're just a couple, Rampy down back, there's a few of them in there, and I think that balance is great when they can get everyone up and going, but I think when they get challenged and they're not right in the right frame of mind. I remember watching them early in the year against, I think it was the Bulldogs, sitting up and watching them play, you could just tell they weren't there. They weren't the same team.
Yeah.
And then you watch them in other games where they're right on.
Was the week after Buddy kicked his 1,000th. And it just seemed like steam was out of them.
Yeah, yeah. And I think that inconsistency may, without knowing the demographic of the list as far as, the age, I think that inconsistency could boil down to some of the, those younger guys just not mentally into it week after week. But I think they're another team. I think Sydney, I think we look at them probably as a more mature outfit, but I reckon they're in a similar boat. Like where these two teams sit on the ladder, they're quite similar, from my perspective. And I think, as you mentioned, if you are going to be a contender at the end of the year, you're going to keep growing and keep getting better. And, we are only at round 9. So I think both these teams, if they...
Build it about 7 out of 10 now. And you want to get to 10 out of 10 for as good as your absolute ceiling of your talent will be. You're at 7 out of 10 now.
100%. They're a different team with Hickey, aren't they, I think? And we saw that even last week. Whether Hickey and Laddams can work in together and still have the right look in the front half, well, I guess still remains to be seen. But he's just been a wonderful pickup for them from last year, and then he's been out for a period this time, which I think coincided with some of that form you talked about.
Yeah, he's an incredible footballer, Tom Hickey. He's a real journeyman, but his craft has been learned over years and years of experience of being the second banana to some really good ruckmen at various clubs. You could picture him turning up to your property with a nail bag on the front, hanging from his hips, and holding a panel saw and walking on it and say, "Where's the job?" You know, he's just got that. He's got that non-footballer look about him, but he just knows his stuff now.
Yeah, he's become
really
a player,
does.
Huh?
Yeah. Well, he started all his early career when he started at the Suns. He was a forward slash ruckman. He was an on-ball ruckman at the start, so he learned his craft there under as a second stringer. Same at the Saints when he went there. Then he goes to the West Coast Eagles as an insurance policy. And he's got Nick Natanui and a couple of others ahead of him as well. So I must say, when he went to West Coast Eagles, I thought, that's probably the last gig Tom's going to get.
Yeah.
But we hadn't really seen him with exposed time in the middle as the man with the job to do. And at Sydney, we have seen that. And at the only tiny, and it's not even a knock, it's like a dent in the armour. At this age, when he's getting that major chance, will his body stand up? That's the only thing I'd look at him. Because he's had a couple of almost fragility items over the last 18 months. Yeah, but fingers crossed for him. He's a tremendous fellow. So he's doing really well.
And the absence of Harry Mackay, so I think tonight will be a better guide than last week. The Giants aren't fully stocked down back at the moment. You've got both McCartans. It's at the ground that Carlton plays especially well when they get a lot of looks up front. That sort of loss is going to diminish them to a degree over a long period of time. It just has to because of
Kurnow
good a player he
didn't
is.
Didn't get a look in until the last quarter last week. But Silvani was terrific. The small guys were terrific. So
tonight, I suspect, is a better measure than last week on that.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that couldn't be more direct with that. I think we're going to really understand that the dynamic of that of that Carlton forward line, obviously without Mackay, that had been the big question mark when I saw him go down. But I think last week, in somewhat makeshift forward line, they did look quite dynamic. I think the challenge is going to be, and this was going to be from the beginning, as soon as Mackay went out, was can Kurnow hold down that number one position? And, you know, as you mentioned, Hutto, he did struggle till late in the game to really sort of come to the fore. But obviously it's going to be supply-demand kind of thing, and if their midfield can get on top and get it in there, at some point he's going to bob up. He's too good not to, but I think it's going to be all of the soldiers underneath him being able to pick up the slack, and I think ultimately it's that forward line group being able to function well enough without someone like a Mackay, who's just such a key figure. But I think they're capable. When you look at the guys that are down there, I think Silvani's been real surprise packet for mine, I reckon.
Well, that's that improvement we talk about.
Yeah.
What you want between round 9 and round 18, that improvement, he's got that improvement early from halfway through last year to now. He's improved out of sight.
Out of sight.
The thing I see with Charlie Kurnow and Silvani, the 192, 194 centimetres, so they're big men. But they're not huge men.
Yeah.
They're big men in this day and age. So 192 is Wayne Carey's height. Yeah, that's a big guy. But in this day and age, and I use a boxing terminology here, Harry Mackay is too big for backmen to handle totally by themselves. So what he does when he's out there and he's got form, it means there must be a minimum of one person looking out for him from the opposition, a minimum. And that means a second or third defender must peel off and come to Harry if you want to keep him under control. Otherwise, you're conceding and say, what do you think the start is? If we just leave our backman to play on him, we're conceding him four shots at goal. Four shots at goal a week. That's the concession. Can we live with that? Yes, I believe our game style is. Or no, we can't give up four shots for sure. So you make that concession how you feel you're going to play elsewhere on the ground, but Harry is too big to handle for the average backman.
Well, that's a question mark. That's why there's such a big question mark for mine, particularly when they've got such strength from the midfield. And you look at how the game, particularly this year, has shifted so much to winning contest and clearance and getting the ball in quickly. We're getting a lot more contests.
They do really well out of that 666 centre bounce clearance into the forward, Carlton. Yeah. So when I was watching the Giants game last week, we were sitting there and it was halfway. And I was sitting with everybody's favourite little Eddie Betts. And I looked at it and thought, yeah, he's covered him. He's got him and him and him. Sam Taylor is a wonderful player. He'll play on Charlie Curno. Charlie got a few at the end when the game was scun. I think from here, from quarter time, their small men were going to have to kick 8 goals. They did. They got more than that. And that's was something that the Giants couldn't deal with down back as well. So they are very capable at ground level, and they're the type of players who capitalise on that centre bounce, winning straight out of that area, bang, inside, 666.
So that's what's before us tonight. The Blues and the Swans. This Swans game is brought to you by Bingley, Australian family owned for more than 65 years. We're going to touch base with both camps in our pre-match show, and then we'll get to the proper preview as we go. Today's major news out of the AFL, that the grand final is remaining a day fixture at 2:30. I did hear the theory, which appealed to me during the day, was that the AFL makes it feel almost as if it's a certainty that it's going to twilight before then announcing in a very popular way, no, it's staying at 2:30, and they get the maximum, see, we listen to you, which I liked as a
thing. I think they've tried that one too many times, Jared, to be honest.
I will say we as a media tipped into it absolutely. If you look at all the reporting this morning, it was it's moving to twilight.
Yep, it was.
Well, it was sold in my mind.
Which, mate, yeah.
And then the fans get the win. Well, the group of fans who are most vocal about it anyway.
Is there a real breakdown in the fans? Have we got a real good depiction of the truth? I don't know what the total amount is, so let's say in Victoria, membership? We got about 800,000 people members.
There is no fan voice, Dermot. I can show you the text machine every day to depict to you. There is no single voice of the fan.
I know. So how do we gauge that, really? How do we gauge that?
I think it's fair to say that in every poll that has been, but they have voted in favour of keeping it at 2:30 around about that time. But if you always made decisions by that, you probably wouldn't go anywhere.
We'd still have pubs closing at 6, no Sunday
trading. Oh, maybe not pubs closing at 6. There might have been a strong enough support for that.
I heard your argument during the week, and there was I was listening, you know I listen in, and there was a caller who said the quality of the game, and you countered his call and said the most devastating football we've seen was the second half or the last 40 minutes. And great call, great counter. I'd counter that counter and say the opposition by then, the season had gone just too long for them. And I thought that opposition in the last 40 minutes of the grand final was as meek a opposition as you could stand. Once they broke them, they were shattered. I'm still a believer that night football has held up to dry day football. And you can have rainy days at the MCG as well. I'm conceding that. I still think night football does lend itself to a greater degree of a greasy, slipperier ball. Doesn't mean you can't have great standards of play. It's an ever so slightly different style of game, and the product is ever so slightly different. So that's how I felt about that. So I kind of am in the traditional sense, but I'm not losing any sleep if they did change it. You know, it's...
The only game in the final series which is played during the day is the grand final. Yep. Every other game is either twilight or night. That it's the right decision for now. If you roll the whole week together and the lowest crowds through 9 rounds in 27 years, you can't, as the governing body right now, upset your constituency any more than they're already. Whatever it is that everyone's feeling, don't give them another reason to be disenchanted or angry or whatever. So I felt all the way through the week that this would end as an afternoon thing, because it's just too jarring for whatever group that is, and it's a very loud group, and it's a majority. Don't disaffect them in a year where you're actually struggling to get them to come through the gates.
What are they most disaffected by?
No, so this is really imprecise. I don't think I would like to be trying to figure that out. But
it'd be a conglomeration of a raft of issues, wouldn't it?
It would. But you'd want to have a really keen ear for that, and then not give them something else to be agitated by. I mean, you could run it as it is election weekend. is don't needle the constituency too much or they'll tip you out.
I hadn't seen any signs about the election at all.
So this is not... And also, this is Gill's last set of decisions. Why wouldn't you just keep people happy on the way out and leave it to the next person to go, we are moving it to where more people will watch and it's the best possible presentation of the spectacle. Leave it to that person to do it.
I also have a take on things, whether it's league football or whatever, and I give it the 5 to 10 year rule. And somebody says, is it right? Will it be this way in 5 to 10 years?
No.
You're a definite no?
I'm sure.
Do you think it'll be... Go around the...
Yeah, no. I think they'll eventually make the change.
Okay.
So I think they'll make the change, but I don't think it has to be a permanent one. They could decide on give it a go. They could decide on every second or every third one. I mean, I don't know. Because I certainly felt... Now, we were broadcasting for radio. The night grand final was too late. So to me, those arguments stood up about the day being too long and kids not being able to see it live. But they are genuine factors. And it may be that we feel the same if a twilight game happens, but it also may not. It may be an awesome spectacle and we may go, that's a pretty good combination of both. Mm. Mm. So the argument that what will we do with the North Melbourne breakfast? I mean, I don't think that holds.
The North Melbourne brunch.
Barbecue. I'm pretty sure you can have a 4 o'clock barbecue rather than just a 1 o'clock barbecue. But it is... This is what I said. It's a cultural decision. It's actually not it's not really a football decision. This is about the way we all engage with that one particular day. It's been this way forever. So you need to bring people with you and if you're going to do it. And you probably need to make a really good fist of explaining why.
It's got the Melbourne Cup feel to it. Where are you going grand final day? Going around to Slug's place. We've got a barbecue. That we do that every year. That sort of thing. You know, there's that cultural existence within the people of Australia who are football followers and the likes. Yeah, it does. Yeah, where are you going, Cup Day? That sort of
Slug's
feeling.
Again.
Yeah, Slug's place as well. Yeah.
It's great
it's got a great barbecue, Slug. So it does have that. It's probably going that way. I would agree with you, gentlemen, that in 5 to 10 years' time, we'll be watching a grand final at the MCG under lights. So that sort of moves the goalposts a little forward for me to actually say, get your head around it, it'll happen.
Yeah, start in the daylight, finish, present the cup under lights, 7:30, everyone's still got time to celebrate as they would like to, rather than the 10:15, 10:20, 10:30 finish.
While I've got your ear, in 5 to 10 years' time, will we have the stand, the rigidity of the stand, the rule mark still? Will we have the rigidity of the absolutely no gesticulation, no comeback to the umpires? Will we have all these rules in 5 to 10 years as they are implemented now?
No. We won't have sorted holding the ball out either, do
we? Yeah.
We'll be in the grave and they won't have figured holding the ball out. No, the game's not a finished product.
No, it'll never be finished. No. It's a moving...
Yep. And the complexity of the game and the glory of the game is the 360 degree of it, which means it the comparisons to other sports I don't think hold. The up and down sports are much easier to govern and set rules for.
Well, there's an offside rule in.
Yeah, you're always there's always going to be push and pull. I think within
who moves the sport so the most, who has the biggest say on moving the sport in terms of you say. It fragments, it moves forward, rules change. It will always move in a certain direction. For me, it's the coaches.
Yeah, coaches,
100%.
Absolutely.
The tactics we react are dictated by the plans of the coaches.
Yeah.
And then the game has a right to go, you've taken it there, but we don't want it to be over there. Mm. So we're going to pull it back as best we can to something over here.
So I heard your commentary with David during the week talking about the statistics of kicking out from fullback. How many times you go through to the other end, how many times, as opposed to how many times it repeatedly comes back at you for another score. I look at that and say, well, good on you for getting the ball down there in the start. Hey, shouldn't you advantage the team which wins the ball and kicks it in their direction?
Well, from a recently retired last year, that is like, if you're not scoring directly from stoppage, that's ultimately what you're trying. That's the entire game plan of most of the good teams is to get it down forward, take territory and set a strong enough defence behind it? Because the percentages of you scoring on a re-entry are, like, enormous.
The only thing it's the first time in my life, and I'm 57, in the last 12 months is the first time I've thought, is there a voice for playing? As in the netball situation, we can't exit zones. And if we can, we have X amount of time to go in. It's the only way you'll break this.
Dermot Burton, Nathan Jones with you on the pre-game show for Beaumont Tiles. They now have hybrid flooring in store.
You're listening to the 2022 Premiership season on AFL Nation. For Beaumont Tiles, hybrid flooring in store now.
Friday night footy brings us to Marvel under the closed roof, Carlton and the Sydney Swans. AFL Nation for Sports Power. Get the latest big brand footy boots in store at Sports Power now. Jared Waitley and Anthony Hudson with Dermot Burton and Nathan Jones for Friday night footy. We're inside the Swans camp here with Senior Assistant Coach Don Pike. Don, always good to have you on AFL Nation. Welcome.
Yeah, good evening, guys.
We were just debating before to set up the picture of the two teams through nine rounds, 6-3. Just give us your diagnosis of the Swans at the moment.
Oh, look, obviously, we'd love to be 9-0, but 6-3. We've played some really good footy. We've had a couple of games. We ran into a pretty good side in Brisbane a few weeks back, and then disappointingly against Gold Coast. But, you know, bounced back last week with Essendon, and, you know, we sit where we sit, and we're sort of pleased with the progress of the team and some of the younger guys, and we think there's more growth to come.
Don Dermot here. Thanks for chatting to us this evening, mate. Your team, they seem to be terribly up or terribly down on various occasions. What do you put this down to?
Well, we sort of spoke about our start a little bit. Probably, we've been guilty a couple of times this year of just not getting out of the box very well, and we sort of spoke about that last week before the game, and it'll be a bit of case again tonight. We know Carlton are a fast starting team, so important we get going. I think in terms of our performances overall, it's, you know, we've probably played some really good footy consistently over four quarters in a few games, but not in enough games. And that's a little bit of the development of the group. And, you know, we're seeing the emergence of a lot of the younger guys, and that sort of comes with the territory at times. Is you get some really exciting stuff. You go, look, we want that, want more of that, but it's hard for those younger guys to keep delivering it week in, week out. And that's probably that consistency which we're searching for from this point on.
No doubt. You mentioned the conversation. How does it pan out? How does it come out? What does it sound like? Hey, we've been poor starters. Is it a sit down and you identify various key elements? Or is it just we weren't switched on? How does it sound?
Well, we probably more look at, you know, the numbers don't lie in terms of our contested possession numbers. Obviously, the scoreboard doesn't lie. Ultimately, but digging a bit deeper than that is go, where is it? And what doesn't allow us to come out and play the way we want to, you know, in those first quarters. So we sort of certainly speak about that. And then we sort of break it down to what does it mean from a preparation viewpoint. And again, we've got a lot of younger guys who are learning how to prepare for a game and what they need to be ready. Some want to be relaxed. Some want to be just sort of chilling out. Other guys probably need to get themselves a little bit more amped up, ready to go. So it's that sort of those sort of conversations, and it's different for each individual, but it's important as a team that, you know, when the siren goes, we're ready to go, and that's something we've been working on. We get another opportunity tonight.
Let's put the cart before the horse. How was the chuckle during the week when Dusty Martin was talked about? He could end up at Sydney, you know.
Oh, is that right? I've heard the rumours, but look, I think it's probably somewhat inappropriate. I don't know. I'm none the wiser. I'm probably no less than you guys do, to be honest.
Don, Dame Ramphy's 200th game tonight. Can you give us an insight? I just from where I sit, what an amazing player and leader. But just from your experience,
yeah. Look, it's, you know, having come to the club a couple of years ago, and you see certain guys from the outside, whether it be Dane or Josh Kennedy or these guys, and you sort of admire how they go about it. And being fortunate to now come in and work with them, you get to understand. And for Dane tonight, 200 games, just an incredible achievement for where he's come from and where he started, and to build himself to being an All-Australian player, being a club champion, It's an incredible journey, but for an incredible person who's just a wonderful leader and a real heart and soul sort of player who doesn't take anything for granted and plays, as you see, he plays just with his heart on his sleeve and you know, he's a competitive animal, and he continues to do that for the footy club, and he's a ripping bloke, and he's a real important part of our team.
And can you give us your thoughts on the row bottom bump? How did you guys see it?
Well, obviously we thought there was, you know, opportunity there to challenge that, which is why we went about it. And, you know, unfortunately, it didn't fall for Rowie, but that's life. But you know, I think we were fairly confident that, you know, the action wasn't going to lead to a suspension. Unfortunately, didn't go there, so he misses tonight. But you know, he'll be fresh and ready to go for next week.
Broadly speaking, Don, how have you seen the way the game has been played this year in terms of ball movement with the second year of the stand rule, how that's changed both the team with the footy and without it?
Yeah, I think it's continued to evolve. I mean, you're probably noticing more teams now not directly standing the mark and trying to stand off and get the opportunity to get into that zone sort of set up and slow opposition down. So, like always happens with the game, sort of, you know, something changes and it takes a little bit of time for people to adapt to that or come up with a plan around that. And, you know, certainly we've noticed this year, obviously off the back of some success last year with our ball movement, teams have been far more, you know, aware of what we're trying to do and trying to shut that down. So, you know, with every challenge comes a new opportunity. So, you know, we continue to try and evolve how we want to move the ball and against each individual opposition and their style of defence. And, you know, we'll get another chance tonight. Carlton are, you know, been a very much improved defensive side this year. And so, you know, we'll have the work cut out, but we've got to win it first and then go to work when we get the ball.
About that stand the mark application, is there certain areas on the ground, you know, players are withdrawing 5 metres so they can crab sideways on the mark if they concede 5 metres? Are there certain areas on the ground you will, as a team rule, come back so you can crab? And are there certain areas where you will just stand the mark and be the statue?
I think probably the general, sort of generally across the board, it seems that the closer to goal or your goals you are, the more prepared you are to give some ground. And I think inside the corridor, it's pretty hard to do because there's so many other alternatives that open up. So that's probably the two generalisations I'd say, is that closer towards your goal, you'll take a bit of ground, and through the corridor, you'll probably try and press up and get that delay if you can on the mark. So, and that's the hard part in terms of coaching it as well, is that every situation is different because, you know, it might call for you to really press up hard and delay that guy because it's an easy one over the top versus stand off and just let him go. So, you know, these are decisions that you've got to entrust the players to make and play the game. And yeah, we're seeing that certainly been more now than ever the case.
I know it's mid-season, Don, but we already have a coaching vacancy at the end of the year, and your name was linked with at least one job last year before you decided that you weren't willing to go back, at least at this stage. Have you got an open mind as far as being a senior coach again? You wouldn't even have to leave your home.
We'll wait and see, guys.
That's not a no, Pikey. Come on.
No, we'll wait and see. Wait and see.
Very good.
Don,
we'll turn that into a headline, Jerry.
No, that's not enough words. Don, thanks a lot. Good luck tonight.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate that.
Good on you. Don Parker inside the Swans camp. And not indulging that conversation at all.
Come on.
I loved his response. It was brilliant.
It puts it back when you get a two-word answer on the journo, doesn't it?
Yes, that's one where you two in the front here, Hudson and Wade, you should be looking for the pinhole like that. Put your two grubby little fingers in it and stretch it into a headline story. Come on. Pike says no to...
Pike refuses to rule out.
There we go. See, he's already drawn up his first headline on it.
The question last year was whether had he gone not now or not ever. But even from that answer, it's not... He hasn't gone not never. Mm. So he's an interesting player in the coaching market. If we ended up with multiple vacancies, I think, and particularly if there ended up being the shuffle of positions,
yep,
and a club that was dead set on having somebody who is experienced, he would be quickly into that conversation.
And the way it ended at Adelaide would have left a bit of taste in his mouth, I'm sure, after how much success they had and then how quickly they fell away. And you know, the ball movement question, that's clearly a strength of his and that's clearly helped the Swans. But being in charge again as a club, it's well known that he's been a successful businessman and had great investments, so he wouldn't be doing it for the money, so he'd be doing it for the right reasons. So an experienced man in footy, he'd be a very worthy candidate.
Well, I'm doing it for the right reasons. What's wrong with a bloke hungry for a bit of...
Well, he's not just doing it for the money, Tim, like you do.
If you're hungry, you're going to do the best job you can.
Yeah, no, that's a fair argument.
The Hyundai Stereoload is the van that is big on space and huge on safety. It's the only commercial van to receive 5-star rating and platinum awards for safety from ANCAP. Available from $47,990 drive away for ABN holders. Take a tech drive today. Anthony McDonald, Tip and Woody call time on his career today. So it's been a tumultuous week at the Dons.
It was emotional, wasn't it?
Yeah, it really was.
Yeah, I mean, he was such a... Yeah, it's a great story, but as a footballer, what he bought, a deadly accurate kick for goal and delivering it to the 50 and as well as all the other elements. But just, when he goes near the footy, first and foremost, the excitement he brought to the fans.
So recap for us, what did he say today that led to this decision?
Well, he didn't actually say, he didn't give any
real detail as to why he'd reached it. He was just incredibly emotional that... He was finishing that part of his life, his football journey, and there are other demands and other parts that he wants to tend to.
He's had his struggles, I think.
Yeah. So he's been absent from the game for a little while. Mm. Out of the dire situation, which was the drug saga, he was the shining light who came from it. He probably doesn't get the opportunity without that confluence of events, and he's the most uplifting part of Essendon for a whole period of time. And he does belong in that category of players who could embolden a moment and draw the eye. So,
And they've missed him this year. Yeah. They really have, obviously, with the other injury, Hooker's retirement and the other injuries with Jones. I mean, their forward line has been decimated. And it's part of how you try and assess what Essendon have done.
So we'll pick up our Essendon conversation in a moment, I reckon. AFL Nation, we'll take your feedback across the weekend on the Southern Phone open line, switch and save with Southern Phone mobile plans. Dermot Burton and Nathan Jones on duty. The Swans game is going to be brought to you by Bingley, Australian family owned for more than 65 years. Carlton and the Sydney Swans to begin round 10. AFL Nation for Sports Power. Get the latest big brand footy boots in store at Sports Power now. Essendon have been the predominant topic of the week. In all the discussion around the Dyson Heppel interview, there was one person who I was really looking forward to hearing from. Nathan Jones, you would have lived this experience at least a couple of times, I would imagine, as the captain of a team who is
on that show,
mightily under siege and on that show. take us to what that moment is before, and then we'll get your assessment of Heppel. And but what is that moment when you have to front up in really the worst of circumstances?
Yeah, well, I, knowing that we were going to talk about it, I didn't watch the couch at the time, but I watched it tonight before coming on air, and geez, it brought back plenty of memories. I still remember going into the show, and the depth of preparation I would make, because I was like, obviously when you're the captain, you're fronting, answering the questions, taking accountability for, in his case and in my case a couple of times, was like, accepting responsibility and accountability for where the team's at, and trying to, I guess, give some sort of perspective on that. Watching it, I felt a little bit uncomfortable for him. In saying that, I felt like he did a reasonable job, and obviously he's going to get picked apart. For me, when I went on, it was all about, not separating yourself from the side. Number one, he's got to be the man out the front and almost just be deflecting an element of it, and genuinely taking accountability, which ultimately there's an element of vulnerability in that, because you've really got to expose yourself and just be super honest about where it's at. So people, because what you're trying to do, I guess, in his situation as a captain and a leader of the club, is to try and, I guess, alleviate some of the pressure rather than go the opposite way. And the difficult thing in that situation is making sure that you sort of say the right thing, because sort of whatever you do say is going to get picked apart. So,
And there's only so much you can say.
Exactly.
When you've said some version of the words a few weeks ago, or the team has and has performed well and then not. But you do have to go in there with something to say. I thought perhaps he needed a bit more, a bit more substance. But as to what that would be, that's very difficult to tell, isn't it?
And that's, I find that, like, it's very hard to say what should he have said, because you don't have the perspective of what they're living day to day. But I tend to agree with you, and that's why I said there's an element of vulnerability and honesty that has to come from it, where they just, that you genuinely in the moment have to take accountability for it and in some way give a reason as to why. Not an excuse, but, you know, just admitting that you've dropped the ball and you know, we haven't been good enough and we've tried this and it's not worked and whatever it is. You know, I said to Jared off air, you know, I remember a couple of times that I'd been on when Melbourne had been under pressure, everyone has to get on the same page that you're all saying, particularly when you're a club under siege, the same message has to continue to come out. And, you know, I guess from mine, not having seen every little bit of it, but it's been a few weeks now that we've heard similar things and we haven't got a response. And that obviously begs to question, like, is it words and when are we going to see the action? And rightfully so, you know, fans and football lovers alike can question that.
That I felt for him because those words have been uttered before. Mm-hmm. And I felt for him. There is a football talk, a football vernacular. And when it gets uttered the third time, the fourth time, it comes out as, it's just platitudes.
Yeah.
It's, I was waiting to hear him say something that we went, would go, all right, let's take this as the stake in the ground and we all move forward from here and this is something different, whether win, lose or draw, but they're going to try something that will go, yeah, we can see that. That wasn't there. And I don't know whether, and I'm like you, I don't know what it would be. Mm. But everything was football vernacular. Yeah, the boys are trying hard. It's not coming off. We've lost confidence. We know that. We can see that. I have my own take on it of their team at the moment, but I did feel for him. He couldn't do much more than just utter the vernacular of the footballing world and mouth the platitudes. Yeah, did you, when you went in there, did you feel like you?
I think you do get credit for being there though. So while it's really hard, actually, if you've got a little bit to say,
yes,
you actually, maybe not your fans, but the rest of the footy world going, good on you for being there.
Yeah, absolutely.
The fans, though, want to hear something.
I think what he's relying on now, ultimately, is the players genuinely taking responsibility. The club as an entire whole, you know, they can say it as much as they like publicly. You need a response from an energy and effort point of view. And that can well and truly be questioned. You know, I think they have 50 attempted tackles and lay 30 last week. Yep. Like, rightfully so, you can question their effort. Like, they could easily go out. It doesn't take talent for them to chase and put pressure on. And
especially when the narrative has been about the blue collar.
100%. So that's the team they want to stand for, and that's the brand that they want to deliver on. I've been in that position too, because I can only imagine the amount of work that he's doing internally to try and, one, maintain the motivation and confidence and try and build guys back up, but two, hold guys to a real high account to how the team and the results are sort of panning out and trying to marry that up and get a result and a response.
Can I ask you, when you go in there as captain, and with all due respect, you were a fantastic player. You weren't Robbie Flower. You weren't Ron Barassi. What is it like when you feel like, I'm doing my everything? I don't know if the other blokes are. I can't say. I can't question them. And I saw you play. And I knew you were doing everything you could. But you doubt whether you can be a Wayne Carey and change the game single-handedly. You doubt whether you can be Robbie Flower and cut a team apart. Do you feel like I can't say anything to say I'm leading here and saying come with me?
No, not necessarily. I think that there's a very different perspective inside the club. Like, you know, they would well and truly have a system. It would never boil down to an individual. I think the difference, you know, from my experience, the reason why Melbourne became such a great team was the commitment to the team, and the execution of, you know, and the buy-in and the ownership of your role and the value that placed on the team's function. And he well and truly would have every right, if he's executing his sort of part of the bargain and playing his role to his best of his ability can hold other guys accountable to that.
Because I felt that he was doubting himself, and it made me look at him, which I hadn't before, and I thought, what a fantastic young man. Mm. We've seen him play some really good football. I'm not putting the boots in while they're down, because even though I muck around with Essendon, I think they're a wonderful club. He's master of no position at the moment.
Mm. Yep.
He's not big enough to be a key backman. He doesn't have tearaway speed to be a running backman. He's not a great enough kick to be the outlet kicker. And he's not a lockdown defender. He is master of no position, but he's found himself in the back line. So it would be tough.
Difficult, absolutely. I've been in that position as well.
Nathan Jones and Dermot Burton with you on the AFL Nation pregame show for Beaumont Tiles. They now have hybrid flooring in store. This Swans game is brought to you by Bingley, Australian family owned for more than 65 years. Carlton and the Sydney Swans, AFL Nation for Sports Power, your local footy experts. We're deep in conversation on, well, really Essendon, but a trigger to a broader conversation, Dermot Burton and Nathan Jones. The Hyundai Staria Load is the van that is big on space and huge on safety. It's the only commercial van to receive 5-star rating and platinum awards for safety from ANCAP. Available from 47,990 drive away for ABN holders. Take a tech drive today. So we were just getting to the good stuff of when the captain doesn't have a position, and the two tension points is what it does to the player that is the captain, and then what it does to the captain's authority. And you've lived this experience, Nathan.
Yeah, for sure. I was sort of mentioning, I reckon it was 2019. We'd just come off a prelim, and I think then we finished second bottom.
That the prelim was in Perth?
Yep.
Against the Eagles?
And then 2019, there was big expectation, and we butchered the preseason. We had, you know, guys way underdone, but we still thought we were going to be all right, and we got, you know, pants pulled down round one. I reckon we 100% should have beaten Port and got done, and that just spiraled out of control. I reckon, yeah, we finished second. I'm pretty sure it was second bottom that year. And what coincided with that sort of dysfunction amongst our team, I started playing heaps of different roles and couldn't really find my position. And come the end of the year, I was like, I can't keep being the captain of the club. I need to step away. And in my eyes, I felt like it was the right time because I could sense and had been involved in, you know, the development of a lot of guys that were coming up underneath me. I had Jack as a co. I was like, I think it's the right time for me to step away. I need to focus more on my footy to keep getting a game. Like, and it's almost like your career does a full circle at that point in time, and you end up having to have the dedication and commitment of an 18, 19-year-old trying to battle to play every single game.
And you recognised that within yourself? There was no prompting from
that?
Yeah,
for sure. I went. I remember going to New Zealand and I said to my wife, I think I'm going to give away the captaincy. Like, I can't, the juggle for me was too difficult, and I've been through a lot of difficult years, and after the high of 18 and then the low of 19, I was like, I need it. I think we can fight our way back as a club. I still was really optimistic, but I was like, if I want to be a part of it, I need to be focusing on me. I think that's the transition in your career. There's a sweet spot period where you roll up every week, you train and play and you just perform. But I think you're bookended by, and I think this is just, synonymous with guys that play for a really long time, is you're bookended by that period of where you got to fight, scratch, perform. It's like, just the every percentage to put to you know, continue your career.
Is it harder, just thinking about it, is it harder for a midfielder or for someone in another position, do you think? Either of you can answer that.
I think it's very...
I'll answer for you. I think it's harder for a midfielder. As a forward or a back, you just lose your capabilities, but you still go out to the same spot.
Mm.
If you're a midfielder, the world is full of... Oh, this bloke's lost a pace, lost a yard or two. He can play in the back pocket now. He can play in the back flank. His knees are sore. He can play in the forward pocket and kick 2-3 goals a week. You find a place somewhere else other than the same spot for midfielders. Forwards and backs, this is one time I actually run up the white flag and say, we've got an easier take on this as a forward. We just... I just stayed in the forward line. I knew I couldn't jump as high. I knew I couldn't run as fast.
You've got a bit more craft by then.
So you're trying to do sneaky things to have an effect on the game. You're not as good, but you understand that midfielders are trying to find a whole new different craft.
What about the front office, Jared, do you think, with this Essendon situation? It just coincides with the fact that Xavier Campbell gets another two-year deal, and they've done a whole lot of things off-field that have obviously been ticked off by the board about where they're going. But should we be hearing more from them, do you think?
Maybe. So I imagine it was Heppel's decision to take the Monday night invitation. I do think that's the Ben Rutten role. And he made quite a good job of it at training yesterday, because he was much more, no, we have been conditional. Like, he gave the concessions of, we have been bad. We haven't met standards. We need to. So he was much less defensive and more, no, and it stops now. So we judge him on what happens next. So the dynamic around the chief executive is obviously really interesting. There's an incident from 7 years ago, which evidently was examined by an independent legal firm, which went to the board and led to Xavier Campbell apologising to staff from something that had happened at a Christmas party or the like. The details of that are in the Weekend Australian tomorrow. There's Nova Paris abandoning sort of the long walk set up in a really essential week for Essendon. But he's got the two-year extension. So that tells you that Xavier Campbell is firmly in control of the direction of that football club, and the board at the moment where they might waver have gone, no, we're not re-signing the coach, we're re-signing the chief executive. So he chooses the direction. This is his plan. We're in his hands to see it through. So while there was a little bit of bewilderment around why that had happened, I think that's really easy to read. They absolutely believe that he's the guy to step them through this. This is his plan. So it also makes it his responsibility to figure out why is the plan faltering and where is accountability going to rest for that. So I think Ben Rutten will spend the back half of the season on trial now. It's just, can he do the job? So I think it's a really simple question in the second half of the season is, can you do the job as the senior coach? And if you can, we're away. And we'll wear the bad season. But if it turns out we made an error and you're not a senior coach, I think that will come to a head in the back part of the season.
That stand up in front of the media and post games as well, to me, and this is just the looking from the outside in, it sounds like somebody, a coach, who's giving a report to the headmaster. He's not in full control of what he wants to be in full control of. Malthouse in those types of situations, Jeans, Parkin, Clarkson. Clarkson would be spiteful right now if he was in Rutten's position. There's no report to the headmaster. They're telling you how they want it to be. And it's a broad sweep. There is charisma. And you and Robbo during the week talked about it. Robbo got almost to it perfectly when he spoke about, can he coach? Can he do this? Yes, 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 yes. There's that one ingredient, the charisma, the X factor, whereby a player thinks I've got this in me. I can perform to this standard. A coach with that charisma, with that understanding, or that's not spite, but that he can get it out of you. He thinks you've got that and a bit more. Now, the truth is it's probably somewhere in between. I don't know if Ben Rutten is that charismatic, demanding coach that gets that of the player and some, because the end sum at the moment is the missed tackles, is the running to position. The end sum is those things which we don't see on the stat sheet. That is dedication to coming off of just that little bit more. And it sounds trite, but, you know, we hear the old local coach, run till you can't anymore. Yeah. There's a bit of that in it.
Yeah. So at the moment, it looks like they're failing on both fronts. Their mechanics are no good and their effort is inadequate.
Mm-hmm.
So the first thing which one do you want to solve first as the coach? They better sort their mechanics out.
Well, you can't solve one.
Yeah, they better sort their mechanics out. And then your question is, does he have it in him to draw this out of the players? They're going to live the back half of the season, quote, in crisis, unquote. See, that's a hard road to walk.
The effort has to be there first before the mechanics, because without the effort, you're not going to run to the spot. Thereafter, the effort will put you where you can employ the mechanics of the game style you want.
So we better see the effort tomorrow night, because the walls are closing in. But it is only round 10. So this is my rider on it. It's round 10. It's not round 16. You'd want to get the upswing soon. Actually, you'd want to get the upswing immediately.
Can they
For me,
I'm going to have to... I'm really sorry. Yep. We're due in the Carlton camp in a moment's time. So... we'll try to come back to it. Tonight's Swans game is brought to you by Bing Lee, Australian family-owned for more than 65 years. This is AFL Nation, the pre-game show for Beaumont Tiles. They now have hybrid flooring in store. Warm-ups happening down below us at Marvel Stadium. Carlton and the Sydney Swans. AFL Nation for Sports Power. Get the latest big brand footy boots in store at Sports Power now. We're inside the Carlton camp with the head of footy, Brad Lloyd. Brad, welcome to AFL Nation.
Yeah, thank you.
There's a great sense of expectation. It's standing room only tonight. How are you feeling coming to each of these games at the moment with a team in terrific form?
Yeah, I feel pretty good. I was actually even getting the car park was packed and had to go to a different entrance tonight. So, yeah, big crowd already. And you can feel the anticipation, so pretty excited.
Haven't you got a permanent car park here?
No, well, we normally turn right, but they said it's full in that area, so turn left. So I haven't had that before this year, so it must be a big crowd.
So what about the vibe compared to where you've been coming to games previously, and you're chasing the season, and you've now got this great position from which to build an attack from? Does it make a difference?
Yeah, it makes a difference, but the team's been pretty workmanlike the way they've gone about it. It's been fairly low-key throughout the week. So the guys are really focused and the way Vossi goes about it with the coaching staff. So, yeah, everyone's really excited with the way we're going, but, pretty strong about the game style and what we want to do from a process point of view. So, yeah, it's all good.
Lloydie, Dermot here. How are you, mate?
Yeah, good, Dermy.
Now, first question, I have to ask you, you as the head of football, you control the hearts and minds of hundreds of thousands of Carlton supporters. How do you want them to behave? Do you want them to blow the lid off it? Or do you want to go down the same hollow call of, oh, we're just keeping a lid on it? You're 7-2, mate.
No, it's funny, actually, the Carlton supporters. People often tell me the Carlton supporters, they might get upset a little bit, but they're not going to go elsewhere and barrack for anyone else, which is unbelievable. So, no, they've been fantastic. And it's exciting time for the club. I'm wrapped for all the people that have... That have hung in there for so long, and we're on the early part of the season, so we'll keep the lid on for a little bit.
Knowing the way football departments work, you'd have done all your almost like your balance at the start of the year. Did you expect to be going this well?
Oh, look, you work through it. Like last year, it was a tough year. It was a tough year for everyone, particularly from the halfway point of the year and everything the club went through. So that was really challenging. So. Yeah, it's hard to put games on it. You're sort of just going, you are going week by week. And, yeah, so we're thrilled with the start. It's just hard to predict. So you're hopeful and you feel like we've been building and you feel like the pre-season, but then been hurt before, thinking you've had a good pre-season. So, we're thrilled with the start and you want to keep it going.
Now, Lloydie, it is election weekend and you've just given me a really political humdrum answer. Did you think you'd be going this well?
I've got a lot of confidence, but the two losses, I'll take that, Dermy.
Lloydie, last week's win, from where I sat, was like almost another stake in the ground, and I feel like as a fan, I'm a fan watching Carlton play at the moment, and I just feel like the maturity of the group, you just continue to grow and answer the calls. How did you guys see last weekend's win?
Yeah, and probably back from some of the questions before, like I think we had a really good pre-season. Then we had a couple of the practice games. We were really strong against St Kilda and Melbourne, and we started the first two games well. But then we were probably a little bit patchy through the three or four weeks in between. But then we've had a really good three-week block where we've built up against North and Adelaide. And then I thought it was a great win on the weekend and some challenges as well that came with it. So, it's good. I'm really excited about seeing some of the young players come through as well. So we've got some real growth underneath. So, I can't wait for tonight. It's going to be a really contested brand of footy. I'm loving the way our midfield's playing at the moment. They're really combative and looking forward to seeing Sydney do the same thing. So it's going to be a great contest.
How important was it to get your players in their right positions? I mean, I know you've had a couple of injuries, but Sardi, you kind of last year almost wanted him to do a role he wasn't designed for. Jack Martin, you wanted him to be a midfielder on occasions. You look like you, even as much as you've progressed, you've kind of settled in a way in allowing your players to play what they were designed for.
Yeah, no, I think there's really clear roles, and I think Vossi's done an outstanding job with the and his coaching staff, new coaching staff with Tim Clark and Aaron Hamill and Ash Hansen. So they've done well there, and I think, you know, hats off the recruiting staff as well. Like bringing Adam Chera and George Hewitt into the side really adds to the midfield to support Walshy and Cripper, and Matt Kennedy stepped up. And then, I guess, yeah, it's a fine line in footy. You bring, we'd love to see Marchbank coming back in the next couple of weeks. But you have Marchbank and Charlie Curnow, then all of a sudden you've got a key back, key forward. But it's a fine line if you don't. So it's been great seeing Charlie alongside Harry. Harry's out for a little bit, but that really adds to it as well. So there's a bit of game plan and structure and cultural things, but there's also that those added personnel, so it all helps.
Seen him very close quarters. I have seen him at close quarters, Caleb Marchbank. He's a tremendous player. So you mentioned is he a couple of weeks away, is he?
He is. He played three quarters at Frankston last week in the VFL. Then the VFL had a bye the weekend just gone, so he'll play on Sunday against Sandringham and play a full game, and then he'll start building up towards senior footy. So he's a high-end player. He's had some injury troubles, but we'd like to see him come back in soon.
Very good, mate.
I was reading a story, Brad. I'm not sure whether you've seen it. Liam Jones has done an interview with the Herald Sun saying he'd love to return to the AFL next year and thinks he's got 3 years of league footy left in him. Are you aware of that?
No, I hadn't seen that. I hadn't. Haven't had a lot of contact with Liam since he finished up at the club, so no, I hadn't seen that. Oh, look, he's a professional. Like, right to the end, he was training pretty hard, and I still hear he's pretty fit, so it doesn't surprise me that he'd get back into it if he could.
Is there any way back to Carlton for him?
Oh, look, as a club, we've sort of moved forward. We had to. We love Liam. We love what he brings to the footy club, but, once that decision was made, we had to keep moving and move on with the players at hand at the moment. So we wish him well and hope to see him back in the system. But we'll keep moving.
And the post-surgery report on Harry Mackay is what are you being told a week on?
Went really well, really clean surgery, and he's back and starting to move around a bit. So he'll be back bigger and better than ever. We've got a bye in a couple of weeks, and then he's probably around that 5 or 6 week mark. He'll come back into it.
Terrific, Brad. Good luck tonight.
Yeah, thanks very much.
Brad Lloyd is the head of footy at Carlton. I've got a couple of minutes on our side here. Nathan, you were about to get to your view on Essendon and what to do and which to fix and where the priority lies and the next few weeks of this season.
Well, it's just some of the damning footage that you see behind the goals. It's like the lack of commitment for team and, I think coupled with the energy, coaching-wise, you just want to see ultimately tipping in for each other. They've got some terrific players that rack a lot of the footy and, I guess from a numbers perspective, perform really well. But what they're really lacking is a genuine cohesion as a unit. And, you see some of the vision of them, the confusion and lack of want and will to run and defend and help each other and commit to that. I think ultimately that's where they're going to have to start from and build from there. And, I read an article on the way in tonight, Essendon's going to go back to basics, stripping their entire plan back to real simplicity. And hopefully, I guess from my experiences, it's stripped back that focuses really on bringing a minimum requirement of effort and energy to executing the fundamental roles of team. You listen to Brad Lloyd then talk about Carlton and how obvious their roles are and players just in the right positions and really believing on the path they're going. And look at the momentum that's generated with, an element of, commitment and sacrifice for the greater good of the team.
So what do you think of that as a strategy to strip out? I'd love to know the exact understanding. Yeah. So we're going to strip back the way that we want to play and just concentrate on what, cracking in?
Yeah, well, I don't
know.
Does
it mean you go back to you change the defensive structures a bit, do you think, from either back to what they were,
quite
how
possibly,
they were doing it last
year
or a bit more man-on-man, or does that mean that sort of stuff? Or
Well, did it have to be an element of that? Like, without obviously being inside and understanding the intricacies of how he, you know, Ben Rutten's tried to coach them, you know, you'd think they're trying to find a new way which they can hold the team accountable and get a result from it. You know, they've got to find that spark. And the most difficult thing is the more they lose and the more they get hammered, that doubt and confidence, which, you know, Heppel and the like have spoken about, creeps in, and it can go one of two ways at this point, and I've lived it probably far too many times where you can completely fall off the cliff and, you know, it all just falls over. Or there's an element of digging in and still finding a way out of the position they're in and fighting back. And, you know, it's probably not too dissimilar to Melbourne's 2020 year, where we didn't make finals, but as the year wore on, we ground away and then just missed out. And then we went away and had such a significant review of the entire footy department as to why we go from a prelim and 2 years out of the finals. And we make some changes and, you know, 12 months later they win the premiership.
I just don't think they have the same level of talent.
Yeah, and that's the question
that you guys had. But
I can tell you what stripped back looks like around the footy. When you have a boundary line throw-in somewhere between the arcs, and you're kicking, well, obviously your direction, a midfielder gets the ball and he's going to get tackled, but he can get a kick away that'll get you 30 metres. Take that. That's stripping back, because what Essendon do, their midfielders get that. They don't want the contact. They'll fire a handball toward away from the direction they're going, chase that handball, wrap around the recipient, and then kick without pressure. Not to, and it won't land where the first snap kick went, but they've racked up two possessions and they've got less yardage. That's stripping it back. Take the punishment to make your team better.
Yeah, and if you look at the best teams with how they play right now, it's exactly how you said. You know, they take the ball with genuine speed and power out the front of stoppages and take ground.
The election might be tomorrow afternoon, but the referendum is tomorrow night. That's when Essendon plays stream time against Richmond.
What are we watching? Which channel?
We're back and forth, I reckon. AFL Nation, the pregame show for Beaumont Tiles. They now have hybrid flooring in store. Friday night footy at Marvel, the closed roof. It's fourth versus fifth. Carlton 7-2. Sydney 6-3. AFL Nation for Sports Power, your local footy experts. Dermot Burton and Nathan Jones, they'll set you up for the rest of the round, and then we will delve deep into what's about to transpire as the Blues and the Swans meet. Before we get to that, though, let's get an odds update with thanks to Sportsbet. Well, all thanks to Sportsbet. Gamble responsibly. 1-800-858-858. The good stuff happens early, Hutto, in round 10, as you mentioned earlier. Tonight, the two games on Saturday, and then Dreamtime tomorrow night. Set us up for what's to come in round 10.
Yeah, well, let's start, Jonesy and Durham, with tomorrow down at Geelong. Gary Rowan plays for the first time. Tom Jonas, the captain, returns for Port Adelaide. Obviously, Ken Hinckley's prophetic statement of it doesn't matter where we lose the five games. If they win this, they're back on even keel. They're pretty much level with Geelong. They've had a couple of good clashes with Port down there over the journey. This is, to me, one of the big matches this weekend. Can Port overcome the Cats down there, or the home ground advantage, which hasn't been as significant in recent times for the Cats, does that get them over the line?
There is an advantage down there. Actually, Jonesy, we were talking about your hard years earlier. You experienced
I've had a couple of
100
point, almost 200 point beltings down there. But anyway, we won't talk about that.
Yeah. This competition is so difficult, regardless of where a team's come from, what they've done, unless you're Melbourne at the moment. It's tough to win five in a row, and that's what Port Adelaide are doing. They've had a couple of really good wins in there. Who they got? The Doggies and the Saints. They got the Saints by a point, and that was against the tide, if you know what I mean. They got back on the board against the Eagles the previous week, so they started to feel good about themselves, had a formulation of how they wanted to play. Dreadfully wet night, inaccurate kicking. They got the win. They rolled on. I'm still looking for evidence, proof against a serious contender, and yeah, the Cats at home, even though you say it's not the fortress it used to be, that's a serious challenge. I'd need to see them win down there to say, yeah, I'm seriously rating them now. I still haven't been totally won over by them. It's almost when you play a team at the moment,
yeah,
I think as against who you play.
That's certainly significant in the year. They haven't actually beaten Geelong down there, I think, since the premiership year of 2007, the first premiership year for the Cats. But we'll move on, but Joe Montagna's numbers during the week on your show, Jared, about Jeremy Cameron and how he's, you know, huge numbers when they win, poor numbers when they lose. Lost a lot of the one-on-one contest.
You'll
really
well
fascinating in analysing Jeremy. We'll move on though. Ballarat, the Bulldogs and the Suns.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So interesting because the Dogs for me, I was here.
Yeah,
we were here
there.
Last
yeah.
week,
they and looked they a lot looked more like themselves.
Absolutely,
didn't they?
Like demolished the contested possession numbers. Their uncontested possession numbers, their midfield just looked to be back running on top of the ground, and their, you know, I guess the way they moved the ball from that situation, they were outstanding. I like the dynamic of their forward line. So they're an interesting one. And then the Suns, well, for me, again, it's just another game to understand where they're at in their progression. It's just another challenge for them. They've been terrific, really, from my point of view. I've really enjoyed watching their growth, and it's another, you know, as I mentioned, test of where their maturity as a side's at. Can they bring the form that they have carried up there down here to the cold and
took it to the SCG. They back at home, it was hot but wet. I still firmly in my mind is their really disappointing performance at the MCG against Collingwood three or four weeks ago. So I can't wait to see what they serve
up. Not discounting the fact that we get a couple wrong each week or more, I still find this that game, the Suns game, the hardest game to tip of the round.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, I've gone Doggies, but...
purely because one team has to travel 2,000 k's or 1,800 k's to get here. That's... And a road trip on top of it.
And then North take on Melbourne on in the twilight. Adelaide, any chance for Adelaide against St Kilda at home? Or
I spoke to my brother on the way here. I said to him, don't underestimate them because they've delivered some pretty good performances, really. I think they're just very much workmanlike and they'll have a crack.
Yep.
And they're a better side at home. But I think the Saints, I reckon they're now on a bit of a roll. Like last week was very impressive. That third quarter was unreal, and I think their belief in how they're going at the minute is just really starting to blossom.
Tremendously honest team, Adelaide.
Yep.
Good to see young Tilthorpe get a... Tilthorpe? I've heard so many ways to say it and not say it, I'm confused.
Yep.
I think he's tremendous overhead. Good to see him getting another game, but they've lost the last three in the row, no matter how honest they have been. You got to play well to beat them, though.
Yep, and the Tigers, as we've said already, and the Bombers Saturday night with Dreamtime. I think there was both teams have lost a player, Jack Graham out for Richmond, and Jordan Ridley to health and safety protocols for the Bombers. Do the Bombers get a response? Do you think enough that they could challenge Richmond seriously?
I don't think so. I like where the Tigers are at. Geez, Lynch is in some sort of form, really. And it's ever since that the Friday night that we watched him, he should have kicked 15 against West Coast. And since then, I was like, wow. And he's just carried that form week after week. So I don't think the Bombers can get near them, really.
Yeah. Tom Lynch, interesting one. I made mention of it during the week. I'm friends with him. I think he's very lucky to be playing. I thought they got it the wrong way around. I mean, you have every right to go in and tackle a bloke without wearing the point of an elbow in your face. If you choose to bump and you get him in the head, you're gone. If you choose to hang the elbow out and you get somebody in the head, I can't see the fundamental moral difference. But anyway, I'm glad he got off. Let's hope it's a warning that that doesn't happen again. So players don't use that, drape the elbow out there.
And Mark McVeigh has put his own stamp pretty quickly. They've settled on 7 changes for the match against West Coast. Gaff and Shuey coming back for the Eagles, so that notionally at least should strengthen them quite a bit. Out for the Giants, Callaghan injured, Hamilton has been omitted. Haynes is out with illness. Keefe has been omitted. Stone is injured. Whitfield is injured. And De Boer has been omitted. So Brandon, Tanner Bruin comes back. Jesse Hogan returns. Peatling, and then he's gone for Jacob Weir to make his debut, and Zach Sproul is also in. So that's where they've settled in the end with seven changes. Should he be concerned that the Eagles might pick this week to suddenly have some better version of themselves, or will it be an easy Giants win?
I think the Giants will get it done.
Yeah. They've lost all parts of their game, the Eagles.
I thought they'd be better last week. I know they got it swamped in the end by Melbourne, but I do think they'll not turn it around to the degree that there'll be any great shakes.
I felt for Jeremy McGovern. When you look back at that footage of him, play on, off the mark, he went,
oh, yeah.
No, he wasn't.
I think what's exciting with the Giants is if there's an element of release the shackles,
yep.
I think you look at the quality of players on their list, if they can get the balance right, I think they can string a few together and play some really promising footy. I think there's a lot to be gained out of this season for them.
Yeah, Mark McVeigh spoke for the first time today and spoke pretty well. And so it'll be interesting to see how they fare. But you'd be nervous, I reckon, just a little nervous coming up with the expectation that you're going to win first up. Normally when you take over, you don't have that expectation at all. So, and then Brisbane and Hawthorn, 13th place, second also on Sunday. Of course, Gunston, the long-term injury. McDonald left out of the team along with McGuinness and Warple omitted. Jath returns and Tom Mitchell and Howe back in for the Hawks. Fullerton is back in as their final. Just the one chance.
Exciting to see CJ back in the team. I thought he was giving something to the opposition that most opposition forward lines could not deal with.
Yep. Oh,
it's turning into a weapon. The backman who receives the ball is looking down his team's direction, is confronted by a player trying to corral him, and then in the blink of an eyelid, he's running downhill on the other side of that player. That is almost the biggest weapon in football at the moment, where we talked about the lock-in of a ball in a forward line. That type of player who breaks that, that's almost the best commodity to have in your club.
And Fremantle and Collingwood to finish off the round. The Pies look quite a bit better with Elliot Ginnivan and Pendlebury coming back into that team. Mason Cox returns as a ruckman rather than a forward this time around after some really good form in the VFL. So surely this is his last chance to prove that he's still got it, what it takes to play at AFL level. Fremantle, Swikowski, Tabernar and Walters, that significantly strengthens their team. So you'd think the doctor's at home, wouldn't you?
Yeah, I reckon. They'll be too good. There's a little bit of almost a blip last week. I think
they were due, and the weather was pretty bad up there. So
that's the numbers game. It's hard to win four or five games in a row in this competition.
So there you go. Some easy tips for everyone for the weekend, Jerry.
Very good.
All right, let's get into the garage for our match preview. Thanks to Autobarn. Autobarn has your top automotive gear at low prices. Set us up for tonight, Dermot Brereton and Nathan Jones.
Well, I agree with Nathan when we mentioned him before. The Swans are in a transition phase, not of a team from an older team to a younger team, but in the middle of the ground. They're trying so many younger players these days. Warner's getting a shot. They've pushed Kennedy out there. So they've still got those players there about. Kennedy is almost without a home at the moment, long-term into the future. And he looks like he's kind of set himself to believe that. My time has passed, but I'm here if you need me. So the Swans have got that young brigade in the middle of the ground. They look like they've got potency up forward. Logan McDonald has taken Hayden McLean's position. They've got Papley back in. Haywood is the mid-size. They look terribly well balanced. The one thing I am worried for, and that is their ability to string games of significance back to back. They don't seem to come with the same intent every week. So I look at the last five games that the Sydney Swans have played. They've had three wins out of five. Three wins against Essendon, Hawthorn and the Eagles. In our competition, this is a pretty ordinary lineup of wins. They've played two teams of significance, and that are the Lions and the Suns, who seem to have elevated, and that's their losses. So anybody who's who we think is better than midfield, they lose to. Anyone who's down the bottom, they win. So are they what they appear to be over the last 5 weeks, or are they that team who just accidentally switches off and we can expect a whole lot more from them?
Yeah, it's going to be the mental game of tonight is huge. When you look at the numbers, I think the game is going to be really won and lost in the centre bounce. Carlton are clearly the number one team at centre bounce in the competition. They're ranked number one, you know, for outscoring their opponent. They're ranked number one of converting clearance into inside 50. And funnily enough, on the flip side, the Swans are ranked number one for losing one-on-one contests. So it's going to be an interesting battle down there, particularly obviously where 666, where everyone's exposed in that one-on-one game. And we all know how strong that Carlton midfield is. And you know, Don Pike touched on the inconsistency with Sydney has been mentioning, or they've been reviewing
their
starts for one, and in particular their contested ball numbers and being able to execute and gain ascendancy, particularly in that phase of the game.
So we're going to have some formalities to observe at the start of Sir Doug Nicholls' rounds. The warm-up's paused for Ream. Ask your plumber to install a Ream steady, hot and strong. The roof is closed at Marvel tonight, so the Kubota cast for Kubota. Together we are shaping and building Australia. The weather doesn't play any role tonight. The ground's in great nick. For Pope, the better way to water Pope's drip ease makes drip irrigation a breeze as we join the formalities.
Highlights Aboriginal culture and also marks the 30th year anniversary of the Mabo decision.
Biladunyan Wangat, Naranik Mandi, Waranjeri Willamik, Waranjeri Balakut, Mundanai Murupkalada Birurang, Mundanai Kiripik, Mundanai Bupuk Nakwarenik, Balalal Bagugung Nugalik, Ba Bikut, Bikdui, Banyabik, Murnmutbik, Wurawurubik, Ba Tarangokbik, Ba Bunjalal Willamu. My name is Mandy Nicholson. I'm a traditional custodian of Naam, of Melbourne. I honoured all of my friends, which are you guys here tonight. I honoured my family, and I also honoured these footy players on either side of me tonight. I also honoured the different layers of Wurundjeri country, the below country, on country, water country, wind country, sky country, and star country. So this is our Wamanjikan Yarga, our welcome dance. Wurundjeri, Wurundjeri al Naramu, Wurundjeri, Wurundjeri al Naramu, Wurundjeri, Wurundjeri al Naramu, Bambucho. A big round of applause for these players. Good luck, both teams. Thank you. Nungodjin.
The welcome to country with both teams sporting their Indigenous Guernseys, specially designed for Sir Doug Nicholls' round.
They don't clash, Jared.
No, very, very much red and blue, right. Nice. Other than what we might see tomorrow night. There will be unmissable moments right throughout the next 2 weekends, Sir Doug Nicholls' round for Drinkwise. Choose to drink wise. You won't miss a moment if you drink wise. We've got a key matchup or two for Illuminate Garden Lighting in a league of their own.
Well, we always look for Lance Franklin, who's going to match him up. I think Tom McCartan will get that. Oh, sorry, Tom McCartan.
That'll be interesting.
I said that'll be interesting if he gets. Sorry, I was thinking down the other end for Charlie for a second. Well, I think Tom McCartan will get Charlie anyway. So we go there. Lance, I've got a feeling they might play, try and just play the position. It's easy to say Wiedering. They might even go with Young against him and try and have Wiedering guard the inside 50, the goal square type kick. He'll be expected to assist and get over to Lance and the likes, but yeah, he creates so many aspects that, you know, avenues to goal.
I'm fascinated with the Cripps. I think he's the best player in the competition. Who plays on him from Sydney?
Does Mills tag
Mills
him?
Tag, yeah, they, that's the question.
I don't know if he's taggable. He's, to me, I've said it before, a big player who puts his snout in the trough,
yeah,
you almost can't tag them. You almost have to go head-to-head.
I don't reckon anyone's untaggable, Dermot. I mean, it's what you have to sacrifice, though, to do it, I suppose, is the question.
But Sid Jackson's in at the coin toss here.
Oh, that's lovely. It's great beautiful. Fellow City.
No one's got a coin.
Oh, good. Well, we've gone cashless, Jared. So
we have gone cashless. They found one in for Sid to toss now. Funny scenes.
That is funny.
Jesse Motlop and James Bell exchange traditional gifts. And the Blues have won the toss. They'll kick to the right as we look at it. So Lance Franklin and Paddy Cripps in there as well. A lovely moment to get things underway. It's great to see Sid Jackson centre stage.
Yeah, lovely man. I think I'm the only one in this box who's old enough to have seen him play. Sid Jackson, yeah, he's a tremendous player in the early and mid-70s with the Carlton footy. Look, he's just got into a little trot, breaking out of the centre there. He's a wonderful player.